It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Back by popular demand, the funky intro.
The funky lead. It seems to be the most popular.
You were chair dancing just a moment ago.
No, don't start that again. I'm just getting my funk on, dude, so we can have some little funky
all
time.
Good. Got the energy up, ready to go.
I like it better, because then I have to warn people that I'm really not trying to conform them to my will. So.
Oh, yeah, you didn't like the come to my agenda one?
I feel like I have to explain it every time, and it's a little cumbersome. But
back to the funky intro.
And the Ezekiel scripture. I think people really like that, man. Yeah, one shepherd and follow that guy, and that's pretty cool.
It's all good.
So we're in October. You know, not your favorite month.
I don't really like Halloween and all that stuff.
We're a long ways from that. My
goodness. No, y'all get to drive around. Halloween's here already.
Oh, you're talking about junk people putting their yard?
Everything's out. Yeah, it's nutty. They go nuts. I don't know what the deal is, but they go nuts.
You know, it's sad because I October is one of my favorite seasons. I was just back in New York last week, and
you like the fall thing.
Oh man, the trees are starting to turn back there. There were places. I was a little early for a peak, but I'm telling you, places we drove through, breathtaking. I love that stuff. So fall's my favorite. I love the days get cooler and the nights get and the days get shorter. I love all that. It's my favorite stuff. So
I've appreciated the dip in temperature. It's been better on the work site.
But, boy, it's sure been a nightmare out there in the country,
Some tragic things going on.
Oh, my gosh, the Amish children. Can you imagine anybody line up 7-8-year-old kids, tie them up, and execute them? My heart just goes out to that whole community. And I've been in that county. I know lots of folks in that county where they are. Man, that breaks my heart. The stuff going on with the Congress and more corruption and lying and deceit. And what a world, man. I had to come away this week just going, this world really, really
is in need of Jesus.
Is in horrible shape. And boy, sin just keeps getting darker and darker. And hopefully the light of Jesus will shine out of our lives in ways that make sense for people. I don't mean you and my life. I mean all of our lives. And we can make a difference where we live. I hope.
Yep. Trying to be salt and light.
That'd be my prayer.
Well, hey, I had an interesting couple of email questions.
You did?
To toss out. Yeah, I got one from...
Not back to the everything you want to know about Brad and Wayne kind of question.
No. This is a little different. This is fun.
Good.
Marianne Rice says, I've been really enjoying your show. It's been brought a lot of affirmation to so many things I've been considering on my own. She says, I have a question for you, too. I've just come out of a 30-year-old non-denominational charismatic church that was started by a man who was leading a campus fellowship. And she goes on to kind of say that, you know, he is kind of a tight rule and reign over the church and nobody dares challenge him. And somehow she's finally stepped away from this church that she's been going to from its inception. And now she's going to a little Lutheran church. Hmm. And she says, I know this is going to sound terribly biased, but I am absolutely surprised to experience such maturity and genuine care from people who do not speak in tongues.
Oh, man, that's a little bit of charismatic bias.
Especially disturbing is the fact that this is a denominational church.
Oh, no.
And it appears to be functioning more closely to the intent of the New Testament church than the one I just came out of, insofar as the love factor is concerned. She says, I cut my spiritual teeth on the teaching that God was doing a new thing in the earth and that he was leaving the denominational churches behind and pouring out his spirit upon certain apostles and prophets to lead his people back to the way it was meant to be. And she says, it's blowing my gaskets that this denominational church is kicking butt when it comes to the stuff that matters.
She like must be your age.
Yeah, I know. Clothing and tutoring inner-city kids, bringing love-laden Bible studies to prison inmates, praying healings for the broken, while my former church is all wrapped up in getting larger numbers through the door and raking in the dough for even bigger buildings. She says, now to my question, is this a national trend? I mean, is this evolution of this little charismatic shepherding movement type church into a big business, hard sell recruiting factories with a pastor who functions more as a CEO than a servant of God's people? I don't know. Is it a national trend, Wayne?
I don't know, but I'm sitting here thinking we should commission the first thegodjourney.com Gallup poll and find out exactly what this trend is.
Oh, there you go. We could get a whole bunch of people writing on for him. I just think it is kind of interesting. And I mean, I appreciate Marianne's question, but it's kind of sad when you look at the dynamic of which a way a lot of things are built. It's like they're ripping on something and they're promoting themselves. And so all the people that are there basically are fed that, well, you know, that's all worthless. And you're just going like, well, obviously it's not.
Right.
And is every little Lutheran church kicking butt in the things that matter of love? I don't know. But it's great to know that this one is.
Yeah.
This one's centered on what matters. And does it matter that they don't speak in tongues?
Not to me at all. Not to me. You know, one of the trends I do think was probably be true by my observations just in the number of places I've touched in recent years would be the charismatic deals that are growing with CEO executive defined as the pastor slash shepherd head guy honcho. I do think those have a tendency, again, not all, but they have a tendency to really get into the whole power tripping, vision instilling, trying to get people to feel like they're more Jesus-y than other folks in their community. I've been in that trap myself, so I think I know what that's about. I think it's also true that more traditional denominations, I mean, there's all kinds of theological issues that go with some of those things, and particularly at the national level of what they're voting on about morality and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I do think some of our brothers and sisters in more traditional deals, that, like she's talking about, really do the stuff. I mean, talking about feeding the poor and tutoring kids in inner city areas and, you know, doing mission outreaches to folks that are hurting overseas. I do think it's not always true. Some of the charismatic things with maybe a pastor guy who really has God's heart might be very, very healthy. But I think the larger they grow, I think there's something about power corrupting and absolute power corrupting absolutely. I know that's not in Scripture, but it seems to be true.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you and I have both been parts of things where charismatic leaders seem to take on a bent and a drive and feel like they're God's direct conduit to a congregation.
They're the Lord's anointed.
And then they don't separate well between what is their own personal ambitions and what may be the life of the Spirit in them. And that confuses other people. So I think it's great to find places where people are saying, man, these people really love God and they're doing the things God's asked them to do. And man, I don't care if that's in a traditional structure, if that's in a traditional denomination, or if it's not. I mean, I just think that's fun stuff.
Well, the thing I took out of this email and kind of her questions is you can't paint with a broad brush.
Nope.
You know, stereotypes really don't work.
Yep.
And there may be some truth to some of the stereotypes that are out there, but the reality is I don't think Jesus is really inviting us to kind of judge and discern that way. I think he's wanting us to appraise things for what they really are, and you can't do that if you don't know. Yeah. You can't do that from a distance.
Yeah,
I don't like making statements about things or people I don't know, because I don't think it's fair. I don't really enjoy being on the receiving end of them. You're not going to stop it.
Right.
You know, people do that left and right, and I think it's largely out of our own insecurities of how do we find validation that a lot of that gets done. But, you know, I think it's exciting that, you know, here she is going to a little traditional Lutheran church that isn't where she thought she could find God, and she's finding him in spades. I mean, he's all over the place there, and that's fantastic.
I think it is fantastic, and finding community with other people that share some of that passion.
Yeah.
I had a little email exchange today with a friend from the Heartland, and she was concerned that a couple of our podcasts lately had kind of come off as, thank God I'm not like them, and you know, she said, ironically, wasn't that the Pharisees' prayer about the publican? I don't think leaving church buildings necessarily mean we won't lapse into some religious thinking. And she said, I really don't think you guys want to be a web church. Well, I assured her, we're not wanting to be a web church. And I think it is easy sometimes. We're talking about people caught up in religion. And a lot of people make the connection that means people who go to buildings. And people who don't go to buildings, they're not caught up in religion. Well, my goodness, that's not true. And
I mean, it really has nothing to do with the building, does it?
No, it doesn't have a thing to do with the building. And I think we've tried to be really clear on that, but I know when, you know,
I think it just bears more repeating.
I do, over and over again. And I think the last thing we would want this whole deal to do is add any more to the us versus them mentality of Christianity in the world. I think you want to recognize brothers and sisters wherever you find them. Walk beside those brothers and sisters God's calling you to walk beside, whether in a traditional thing or not. I think the larger discussion is, though, how do we think outside the box of this religious obligation deal that is as much in homes as it is in buildings, and as much in people's psyche as it is in other things out there? Because we've talked all along, the system is something inside you, that systemized way of thinking. It's not just the building down the street. It's not just somebody organizing an event.
And it's not just in relationship to religion, actually, or faith. I mean, I find myself in a lot of different settings, and one of the things that's a challenge is I don't really like getting buttonholed in someone's little perception of they have some buzz phrase that they think, oh, that means you're part of those. And I'm going like, no. Well, then you're part of that. And I'm going like, well, no. I might know folks from both different camps. It, you know, might be politics, might be, you know, religious stuff, but just going like, I don't think I'm either. And I don't know that I identify with any of that enough to know exactly, you know, well, what are you? How do you classify yourself? I don't know. And I don't want to. I'd like to defy classification if I could for a little.
Do you think that's a way we try to, instead of dealing with a person as an individual, want to find a nice little comfortable box to stick them into? And
yeah.
I know when I was first started flying around, you'd find other believers on the plane, and one of the first things you'd ask them is, well, you know, who do you fellowship with? How do you fellowship? And it doesn't matter what they say. You say Baptist, Episcopal, Vineyard, Foursquare, whatever, and immediately you draw a box around that. And you think now you know them,
right?
Because you've got the defining thing. And I really do think that flies against our freedom to treat every person we come in contact with as an individual, not some kind of, oh, well, you're one of those, and then make all these assumptions about them, and I'm finding more and more, most of which aren't valid. I mean, the wonderful thing about not having that kind of conversation anymore on airplanes is it really takes getting to know the person. Because I'm not going to ask them, you know, what brand name that you affiliate with. And I always hated answering that, even when I did have one to answer with. Because, again, I always felt like I was being put in a box, maybe because that's because I was doing it to others, and not everybody does that, but for me, I think my freedom out of this was to really see that I'm not relating to this person as an individual.
Right.
I'm trying to relate to them as a class of people. And in doing so, we're just wrong way too often as to what that means.
A lot of people, they're not sure what to do when you don't have all the defining elements surrounding them. It's hard. When all of a sudden, that's as life as you've known it. And I think to some degree, we are creatures of habit. A lot of people, even if they love spontaneity, they still appreciate elements of routine. And it could be the very thing that drives them nuts. But at the same time, that's we turn to a lot of things or titles or a sense of where my place is. And that gives us a sense of security. A lot of our identity can kind of come out of those things, or the roles we've done. And I think one of the biggest challenges is I don't know that God is really saying that's really where your identity stems from. That's where we've, in a vacuum, perhaps that's where we've sought to establish it or anchor it. And yet, I think God tends to want to dislodge and unmoor a fair amount of that so that we can ultimately be re-anchored in Him. But that's a very disturbing process.
Yeah, you notice that.
Yeah, I mean, that tends to just discombobulate you in a lot of ways.
I was thinking while you were talking about our neighbors next door that we met and find out they're Mormon. And one of the things Sarah and I have been careful not to do to this point in our relationship is box them in with that specifically. To say, gosh, I want to get to know them as people. I want to know what they're hungry about. I want to know what excites them. I want to know, I want a relationship to not, you know, have to pull out my, you know, Angel Moroni books or whatever they are. In fact, I was right. Last week in New York, I was right by that mountain where, you know, the gold tablets appeared and all that stuff. And it's a major place where
Holy
Mormons
shrine.
Come. But, you know, when you think about someone as a Mormon, then you start thinking about, okay, all the theology things that need to be adjusted. In fact, we had Jehovah's Witnesses on the street today. I must have missed them. They didn't knock on my door. But, you know, and you just you get to thinking, okay, here's how I argue with these people.
Right.
Instead of, well, how do I get to know them as people and then see what God does? And if it's true, even the folks in the world or in alternative religious things, how much more in the family, man? My heart just says there's so much division between the among the body of Christ, the genuine body of Christ in the world. Brand names are part of that, but it's not just that. We use theologies, we use worship styles, you know, you into the bump and funk stuff, or you into the, you know, those old boring hymns, as some people describe them. And there's just so many ways to create these us versus them, contemporary versus old-fashioned, emergent versus, you know, or house church, or relational, or, man, I tell you, I just want people to be the family and live as the family. And last week, the group of folks I was with in New York, one of the things that really blessed me about it, I was with a group of folks in New York, upstate, that are all, there's a charism, those charismatic congregation things that they have been involved in together for a number of years. Some have spilled out of that, just saying they couldn't go along any further. They found out some things that were disturbing to them and walked away. Some of those are still there trying to save this thing and wish these other folks who've left would come back. And I was with a whole mix of that for the weekend. And I've never been in a situation like this where people are really seeing a bit differently and walking it out differently. And there's some hurt in that. Yeah, people who've left. You know, the people who remain, you know, gosh, would they love to have them back and not see that separation? Yeah. Do people feel like, gosh, those people leaving takes out a major part of what we were to this community? Now our ministry is going to be, you know, somewhat diminished. Yeah. Do people on the outside of that just feel like, man, I don't want to be excluded from people's lives just because we're not there on Sunday morning or because we wanted to jump through some of the hoops we felt like we had to jump through? What amazed me is all those people could be in the same room and place for a weekend together. And honestly talk about all that, and there wasn't an us versus them kind of shadow to it, and I was breathtaking. I told them so. I said, I've never seen this before, because usually there's just, yeah, there's hurt and there's pain in it, but there wasn't animosity, and there wasn't this,
oh,
I'm right, you're wrong, you're an idiot, no, you're the idiot. That wasn't there. And, man, that's refreshing, because I see that.
Those make for challenging meetings.
Oh, I see that even on internet lists. For those of you on my live stream, I've seen that going on for a while there. Again, people got a better way of doing things. They've got to convince other people a better way of doing things. And it's just like, why are we doing this? Don't we have enough trouble just living life in this world that's so broken that you'd think our time with each other as brothers and sisters would not be to pick at and divide, but would be to encourage and to stimulate one another, as the writer of Hebrews says, to love and good deeds. I mean, just, man, God's big enough for you. He can get you through this. And however God's calling you to walk with Him, and whoever He's calling you to walk alongside right now, and if, my goodness, they're Lutherans, that's okay.
Oh, no.
And if they're vineyard people, that's okay. And not be so preoccupied on what we're reacting to that we can't see past all of that and love people for being people. Now, gee, that's novel.
That's a novel thought. Yeah, that's a little radical there.
Oh, and I tell you what, if I thought we were doing anything that had this us versus them thing, and I know we probably said things that people take that way, but if I thought we were doing that, I'd probably quit the whole deal, because my heart's just not there.
Well, I think what birthed our whole desire of doing this was, I think both you and I were kind of tired of the whole us versus them. We had a notion that there's a mass missing middle that never really gets identified and spoken to. And I think, you know, with all the work that you do with bridge builders, it's like, yeah, our desire is to try to bring people together, not polarize them and, you know, pit them against one another. It's more like, you know, I have tons of friends who are still faithfully involved in local church settings. And, you know, some of them have realized, oh, I guess the Cummings are okay. You know, shock of all shocks.
Imagine
because
that.
We're not doing that. Yeah. I guess they're okay. I have other friends that are still kind of like, oh, gosh, we're kind of concerned. And we still, you know, want to consistently invite them. And hopefully they'll come back. And you're just going like, you know, all in all, I love those people. They're great people.
Yeah.
I don't think just alike. But that's not going to stop the friendship from taking place. I'm not going to like, well, we just don't want to have to deal with you. I mean, Kelly made an interesting comment just tonight at dinner where...
And Kelly would be your wife?
My wife, yes. She said, you know, I've been noticing something that's just a little sort of disturbing, sort of being outside of the regular traditional context, is that so many Christians are always kind of so concerned about defining what's right and who's wrong. And I sat there and that was a just real telling comment, because I realized, like, yeah, that's a little bit of what's frustrating. It's like, I don't know that Jesus really, in our desire to know what truth is, I think truth is a person.
That would make it simpler.
And
it's not the list.
It's not the list.
Of
I don't
theology.
Think he's trying to.
Oh my gosh!
And you sit there, it's like,
I don't want to hear this.
If truth is a person, then I don't need to sort of size everyone else up in light of, well, are they right or wrong? It's more like, if he's a person, then I want to get to know him. If truth is something else than that, then it seems like you got to fight through all the minutiae.
You do, and then that's how we keep, since the 3rd or 4th century, keep polarizing people, because we had to figure out who the heretics were, so we'd know who the home team is, so we could know...
us versus them.
And we're back to that, and I one of the scriptures that I've really treasured in this journey, and I haven't looked it up in a while, it's in Timothy, maybe 1 Timothy, where Paul writes, and you look it up with this, you know, the church is built on this one sure foundation. And he says a couple of things there. One of those things is, God knows those who are his. Now, I just think that's breathtaking. I mean, if God knows, then I don't need to get my little, you know, ruler out and measure everybody, see if you...
I'm going to define them for you.
...rise to that height to know if I... And what I found is, if God's asked us to love in the world, my love for a believer is really no different than my love for a non-believer. I think part of this is you're kind of dividing up between... you know, if I know you're a believer, then I'm going to love you differently than if I know you're one of those evil people out there who are going to burn for a long time. Oh, this is funny. I'm going to get in trouble with my folks in New York. This is hilarious. I keep meaning to post this on my blog, but haven't yet. But we were Sunday morning, late morning, early afternoon, some folks pulled out some guitars, and we were singing together. And they were singing that old song, Jesus coming soon, morning or night or noon, many will meet their doom. And if you've never heard this chorus, it's a happy little chorus. It's Jesus coming soon.
They
and everybody's singing this and clapping, and they're so happy. And then, and I've sung this for years, and I've never had this thought before, but I haven't heard it lately. And when that many will meet their doom, and people are just all excited.
Isn't that great?
I went, what? Hold everything. And they said, oh, please don't tell them we did it in New York. And I said, no, I won't. I won't let anybody know that happened there. But I'm kidding. I never made the promise. There it is. But we all learned something. I think it was a wonderful thing to say, you know, the old mentality of us versus them is, hallelujah, we're going to glory. And burn, baby, burn. I mean, that's how I was taught to think about the world. And I sang that song often as a young man and, you know, in my 20s. Never once had the thought, why are we celebrating the fact that many will meet their doom? Why is that?
That's not a happy thought.
Why are you so far from the mic, man? You went across the other room.
I'm just resting back. I was thinking about it. I go, I don't understand. Because, you know, so much of my upbringing was with the same thing. It's kind of like in our effort to somehow learn what the truth is, it's always done in sort of a polarizing, I've got to empower you to know what's bad and who's wrong. And you're just going like, I don't think that that's helped at all.
No, it hasn't.
And it hasn't enabled me to love them more deeply. I mean, I think you've shared this in some of the transition things, but, you know, it's like we're raised to be good little Pharisees.
Wow.
Where we learn how to do things right, and we know what's right, and we're able to point out what's wrong. And it's like, I don't think that is being very intimate with the knowledge of the truth as a person.
No.
He didn't do that. He goes to Zacchaeus, I'm going to your house.
Yep.
And what's missing is the gasp in the crowd. It's
what?
Like, what?
Yeah.
And you go like, Jesus seemed to validate the completely invalidated. He seemed to hang out with the folks that were not acceptable. And it's like he turned so many things upside down and just going like, gosh, maybe he didn't turn anything upside down. Maybe we're the ones who are standing on our flipping heads.
Yeah. And we've got this notion about people that continues to keep us from knowing them as individuals because we can divide them away in these groupings. When you mentioned bridge builders, I was thinking about that earlier. The number of times I've walked into a room with, you know, 15 gay rights advocates on this side of the room and 15 conservative Christians on this side of the room, and we're fighting over this policy. And when we finally work at how do we have a school district that is fair to our differences rather than how do I get the school district to embrace my view over your view. Not only do we get to a policy that fixes it, but one of the things I noticed walking out of that room, coming in, people are polarized, glaring across the room. That's the enemy over there. Those are gay rights advocates, or those are Christian zealots, or whatever. By the end of the meetings, by the end of maybe the day or two we've spent together, there's genuine relationship that begins to happen among those people across those lines. And we're not doing enough of that now. I mean, I think, here's my political cynicism again, but I think Democrats and Republicans in the United States today have never been worse at polarizing this country off the stupidest things only for political power, and not at all caring about the future of this nation and the future of the people and the future of our place in the world. No one is working together to find the common ground. We're willing to make any accusation, point. And again, if we participate in that, even among the family of God, and choose between those that really get it and those that are, again, why are we doing that? If yeah, Jesus didn't do it. And that's not saying all theology is, you can believe whatever you want, nobody cares. Not saying that. Because, like you said, truth is a person. So, in the end, whether or not we're coming to know Christ is going to be incredibly significant for whether we're living free in the world or justifying our bondages. That's absolutely true. But whether someone's living in the pain of their bondage or learning to live in the freedom of Christ, they're no less worthy of love. I think that's the point you're making about Jesus being with Zacchaeus and Nicodemus, and with James and John and Mary and Martha and Lazarus. He was with all kinds of people because he wanted them to know that love.
He seemed to be blurring the lines and inviting everyone to become a part of the family, as opposed to, you know, defining hard and fast lines. Well, you're in and you're out. And it's like, you know, I think we do that out of our insecurities. I think it's a cheap and easy way to sort of just stereotype this one group of people, because I can talk about them critically or negatively in mass, because it probably, as individuals, wouldn't hold up. And I don't know why that happens in our culture.
Doesn't it build us up?
If I'm
on the right team, what Mary Ann's letter said when you read it early on, she was talking about, you know, this group of apostles and prophets, they're going to lead us to the really right thing. And man, I have heard that in a billion different ways since I was in diapers, you know, which was back when I was one or two. I don't know why. People might confuse that. Yet. But it's we're part of the final great move of God. I mean, the Toronto refreshing thing, it always carried that. If you don't go there, you're missing out on what God's doing. The stuff with, even if when I hear people talk about even being outside the box that way, I want to run. I'm just like, I don't want to be part of that. I want to follow God wherever he asks me to. I think people who are in systems get all kinds of validation, and what we deal with, people on the outside of that often don't. But I honestly think that's probably a good thing. We've got to die to our need to feel special, that God loves me more than he loves other people, and that my theology is more right, my activities more anointed, my goodness, just think in terms of how it is that we love the people God's put in front of me today, no matter where they're coming from.
Well, yeah, the whole comparative value system, I mean, I would think a little differently than what you just said. You know, maybe we do need to die to our need to be special, but God makes me feel special. He doesn't make me feel more special than.
That's my point. No, that's my point. I'm not saying you were not special to him, but I'm no more special to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole comparative dynamic is what has got to be removed, because that's not even enjoying the fact that, you know what, each and every one of us is, you know, fearfully and wonderfully made. I mean, it's like, I'm created in the image of God. Wow. Wow, whether I understand that or not. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And when you begin to sort of get lost in a sense of wonder and awe with just how neat some of that stuff is, I don't need to compare it with anything.
Absolutely.
I don't go like, oh man, I am so awesome. I'm so glad I'm a human, not this dumb dog next to me down here.
Hey. That's Sheba. You'd be nice to Sheba. No,
but I mean,
she's our podcast partner.
Why would there be a need? There is no need to do that.
Yeah.
It's when I don't really know that that's true. Mm-hmm. I'm sometimes trying to validate that by, you know, putting something else down. And it's like, you know, I watch my little kids, and you can watch the little, you know, the playground dynamics and the school dynamics, and as they're learning to feel good about themselves, they can lapse into the kind of stupidity of trying to say, well, you know, so-and-so's, and we call them on it. It's like, why do you need to put so-and-so down? It has nothing to do with the fact that you're doing really good at this.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to feel better because you're doing better than. If you're doing great, great.
But we're taught that. I mean, from very young ages, we're really taught to marginalize people who are different, you know. For me, it was big ears, and, you know, I was called radar ears when I was younger. Those Jacobson ears.
I like your ears.
Those Jacobson ears with the burr haircut. I'm telling you what. We were an interesting
wasn't
look.
Working for you, huh?
Well, it worked for me at the time. We were farmers, man. You don't want to spend any time on your hair. That's the deal. So the burr cut was working for me, but radar ears look good. I didn't do it. But we make fun of anybody for any kind of difference, and then we look to somehow stake our identity based on, well, what makes me special? I had an interesting email exchange today with someone that I ran across on some things on the internet, and I felt like God asked me just to walk beside this person for a bit and help them sort out some things. So I wrote them some emails, and they wrote back just saying, why do you care about me? And today, at the end of it, this person wrote and said, can I ask you a question? And if you don't want to answer it, that's cool. But, you know, I know you're a busy guy. I know you write. I know you travel. I know you do all these things. Why have you taken some time with me specifically? What is it about me that drew your attention that made you want to get involved here? And what I almost heard behind it was, what made me special to you? And my response to this person was, you know what? I know tons of people all over the place. Not a day sitting here I couldn't pick up my phone and be on the phone all day to people all over the world and this area that I love deeply. Many of their homes I've stayed in. When they call, right? I mean, they're just literally hundreds of people like that. And more I meet regularly. I mean, I, you know, 10 or 12 emails today from people I've never met, touched by something I write me things. And she's, you know, what among all that makes me stand out? And I just said, you know, it's like asking me, why do I love my children, or why do I think sunsets are beautiful, or, you know, fall leaves? And I don't really know how to answer that. I said, I didn't used to love people. I used to be ministry, and I put that in air quotes, ministry. I said this to them, ministry was all about me. People were not its object. They were its fodder. I used people to... And I didn't know I was doing it at the time. I don't think I look back and say, yeah, I was that calculating and that manipulative. But looking back, I know it was true. I know it had more to do with what I wanted and needed than what they could benefit from. But I said, God's changed some of that in me. I watch the news now. I tear up over stories like little girls being killed in schools in Pennsylvania. And I'm deeply touched by the ravages of hurt in people's lives. And I read emails. I read an email this morning. It was just somebody celebrating something God had done in their life, someone I hardly even know. And I found myself just tearing up in gratefulness. I said, well, God, I mean, genuinely choking up a little. I'm not trying to pretend that. Now, that is so far from the Wayne I grew up with. I don't even know this guy. But what I said to this person was, when I saw you hurting, I see lots of people hurting, things that come through, and I pray God put some people near those people, because I can't possibly get involved with all the people that intersect my life on a given day. But when God nudges me, and I feel like the Holy Spirit says, I want you to walk beside that one for a while, then I do. And we've had a significant exchange of emails to try and sort through some things in this person's life. And at the end of it, what I loved about what was written back to me was this. I can see now that I've only loved people when I could get something out of it.
Mm.
And I've never loved people when there was nothing for me to gain.
Mm.
And I just think that's a breathtaking insight, because that is a lot of what's been shifting in my life. And why, when you get down to saying, gosh, let's love people for who they are and take the ones God's assigned us to and not think it's because we're more special or they are, but simply because this is what God has asked us to do. And when it's part of that, then we don't need, which every group who's ever formed, I think, in the last 2,000 years, starts with a statement of faith. We need to know, on these 18 points, that you agree with us. And I remember my first job as a pastor, associate pastor, I had to sign a statement to join the Four Square. I think it was 15 things on this list. 12 of them I kind of agreed with, 3 I didn't. And I remember, I remember going and saying, I can't sign this. I went into the pastor, I don't think I can sign this. He said, what do you mean? I said, these 3 things. I'm not a pre-trib rapture guy, and you know, I don't think smokers are going to hell or whatever else it was. And he looked at me and goes, just sign it. Nobody takes that seriously. And yet, in the end, I think people do take it seriously, and I think people, you know, I wish now, that's the first time I wrote an article that's on my website. That's the first time I think I've compromised my conscience to get along in with something. And, you know, the worth of the salaries, oh, nobody takes it seriously, who cares? Instead of, what I wish I'd done today was crossed out those three initial
dumb,
and then say, you make this decision as to whether you want me in or out. I'm willing to, but I'm not willing to compromise my conscience. And it's those distinctives that ruin us, and I would hate to think we've done anything to encourage that from those who are outside the box, quote unquote, looking back at people who attend Sunday morning gatherings. And if we feel superior to, or gosh, we're in real freedom and they're in bondage,
I'll guarantee you, go visit
some of those again and find out it's not true.
We said things that perhaps we ought to say, oh, I apologize for.
Okay.
I mean, the truth is it in our hearts?
I'm sure people are going to send those quotes to us.
No, but it's like when you look at it, it's like in the course of many words, it's probably impossible not to misspeak a little bit and
to leave
people
that impression,
revealing some aspects. There's mixture in my heart. I would love to say I'm finished.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not. And I have no problem going like, yeah, work site under construction. But I think the thing that I love is God is giving me a heart to embrace and enjoy more people from more diverse realms than I ever have, because I somehow in this whole shifting of what he's been doing, at least in our lives, is there isn't a sense of I need to define myself by this group I'm a part of.
Yep.
It's like, you know what? I don't got a group. I don't know how to define myself that way. You know, on Saturdays, I'm coach because I coach soccer. But is that how I introduce myself? Hi, I'm coach. It's like, no, that's a function. That's a role I do when I'm with those guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, to be able to just live in sort of the enjoyment and freedom of just going like, all right, Lord, who do you got today to relate to? That's a blast.
Which is why you've got Jesus having dinner with a Pharisee one day, lunch with a tax gatherer the next, hanging out with people on the street. I mean, it's just
water with a woman of ill repute.
And not putting ourselves in a box and not putting those other people in a box. I even was in a prison in Florida a few years back. They'd used He Loves Me for some things, and that's why I'd come talk to the prisoners. Been a long time since I'd been with a large group of prisoners in a fairly secure facility. That's just amazing. You meet those people and you go, gosh, these are just people. You know, I was taught that if you go to prison, man, then you're and just people that did some really dumb things and, yeah, got in trouble with the law and, yeah, serving time. Although all the ones I talked to were innocent. No, I'm kidding. They weren't. But I just think even there, you know, if once we cease to love people as people, we miss something that I don't think Jesus wants us to miss.
I'm so taken back by the fact that Jesus, throughout the Gospels, he was always able to relate to what was going on, but he never missed a moment to relate to a person, an individual. In the throng of everything that was going, and all the activity, these large crowds, here you see Jesus relating to a person. And you're just going like, gosh, in ministry for me, I didn't have time for that. I had all these important things to do. You're just going like, what's wrong with that? And to be able to kind of dial in to, I think, the kind of life that Jesus wants us to live, I think he does want us to relate to people as people and see them through his eyes.
And simply do in the course of our day what he asks us to do. I just hope that we are careful that whatever we do doesn't exacerbate that us versus them mentality at any level of my life, but instead just as kind of an open, safe place for all kinds of people to sort out their life in Jesus.
All right, group hug.
Wow. Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.